Welcome to Built Brave. Driven women sharing their stories to show others what is possible for them. Because we were all born brave. I'm your host, Lo Wentworth, and this is Built Brave. Are you ready? Hello, everyone. How are you? I always love asking how you guys are, because I think hopefully you take a pause to check in. Maybe not. I don't know. Sometimes talking to a microphone can make you do crazy things or assume crazy assumptions. And with that, I digress. So today's guest, I'm excited to have her on because her background is very diverse. Yes, she is a doctor, but she also loves the arts. She was a pageant queen, rather participated in pageants. She is very passionate about healthcare and activism and getting information to people that need it, and that healthcare is about service and not about the dollar bill, even though everything is a business. And we talk about all different things, and I just enjoyed this conversation with her because it shows how to be flexible with your goals. So she went into med school intending to be a dermatologist, and now she is trailblazing a new method, a new way of medicine that just happened by following her interest and some butterbeer. And with that, let us begin. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Built Brave podcast. I'm excited for today's guest. So, Dr. Alyssa Cole, can you take it away? Let everyone know who you are and what you're about.
Hi, everyone. Thank you so much for having me on this podcast. So, my name is Dr. Alyssa Cole. I am a resident physician specializing in physical medicine and rehabilitation, otherwise known as physiatry. We are the doctors that manage the medical care and rehabilitation of patients with various medical conditions from spinal cord and traumatic brain injuries to strokes, amputees, sports-related injuries, and more. I am actually going to be starting my fellowship soon in cancer rehabilitation. And outside of the hospital, I am a social media influencer and blogger.
So, how did you get started into medicine?
So, I think I always wanted to be a doctor. I remember when I was younger, I told my mom that I wanted to be a physician, and she looked at me and she said, yeah, but you don't do very well with getting shots. And I said, oh, yeah, that's not a problem. I don't have to get the shots. I just have to give them, and I can definitely give the shots. but as it turned out, I wasn't entirely sure. I knew I was definitely interested in the sciences and the arts. So I ended up doing a dual degree, double major in college with a Bachelor of Arts in Classics and a Bachelor of Science in Biology. And through that, I really got to understand basically the art of medicine. And I did a lot of clinical exposure experiences that introduced me more into medicine, and found that I just really loved the idea of helping people, giving back to the community, and I wanted to continue to pursue that passion as a physician.
I love it. Your mom's like, you can't do that because you can't take shots. You know, sometimes you don't want to see the needle going into you. You can like look away. I've had somewhere I've gotten shots and I've looked away and they're like rubbing my shoulder and being like, it's okay. And I'm going, just do the 1, 2, 3 and stick, or 1, 2 and stick. I don't care. It's fine. I just don't want to see
exactly.
It.
Exactly.
That's where I get freaked out.
Yeah. You know, and it's funny because actually now as a physician, we don't actually give that many shots. It's more so the nurses who do that. So turns out I don't even have to give them, but I could if I needed to.
Okay. So you have this dual degree. And then you go on to med school and you have your influencer blogging stuff. What brought that along?
So I initially started a blog when I was competing for pageants through the Miss America scholarship program. And that was to kind of, I guess, tell people, you know, what the program was about, what my platform was, which was adding arts to STEM disciplines, science, technology, engineering, and mathematics, and spread more awareness about competing in pageants, as well as doing it during medical school, and also their involvement with the Children's Miracle Network. So it was a great way for outreach to the community and to kind of share my experience and document, kind of blog about it. And then I remember after I got into residency, I put it on the back burner for a little bit so I could focus on caring for my patients. But I had some downtime in between transitioning from my intern year, which is my first year, and my specialty years, which would be when I was specializing in physical medicine and rehabilitation. And I decided, you know, this is still an interesting experience. I feel like a lot of medical students have been asking me about what residency is like, and prospective medical students want to know what the medical school process and application process is like. And just, you know, overall giving some insight into my lifestyle and food and fashion and still living healthy while working as a doctor. So I decided to revamp my blog. And now it's available. It's online at dailydoseofvita.blogspot.com. But on top of that, I also started to get more involved with social media, especially Instagram and more recently TikTok. And it's just a really fun outlet to kind of balance everything that goes on in the hospital and kind of balance that left and right-sided brain. You know, you've got your left side, which I guess you could think of as the logical side, and then the right side is more the creative artistic side. And so now balancing both of those, you kind of have your arts and sciences. And I guess that's something that I've been passionate about my whole life, where you have the arts side. I was a classics major. My platform for competing in the Miss America state pageants was adding arts to STEM disciplines. And then you have the science side as a physician, working in medicine. And I guess you could say it's splitting your soul in two, but it's worth it.
I think there's some merit, though, to bringing out the balances, because I know my mom had this one rule in our house that was if we did sports, we had to do some sort of arts. Mm-hmm. And so we did that all throughout middle school and high school, because you have a little bit more choice in your schedule. Mm-hmm. And then later on, I stopped really doing the arts, and I was working out more. And then, you know, going through my own soul searching, I realized I needed to bring that back in. Yes. Like that was the balance. That's what I call it, getting back to basics, where what did you do growing up? That was, you know, put you in flow that you were present with, and it was sports and the arts. So I had to figure out how to bring those both in, because, you know, as you get older, your schedule gets much more abundant.
Yes, it gets packed. And then you don't want to spread yourself too thin, but you have to find that balance of what you enjoy and really finding that balance between the art and science. Because art can also be a form of therapy too.
So what got you into the Miss America pageant? I'm curious.
Yeah. So I actually had a very close friend who was a medical school colleague, and she had competed and was Miss Vermont a few years before medical school started. And she was telling me about it, and that there's a lot of opportunity for scholarships to help pay for medical school, or just, you know, whatever school you're in at the time that you're competing. In my case, it was medical school. And that it was a great opportunity to meet people, to improve public speaking skills, and really to kind of build that professional skills that are going to be needed in your future, and also to have fun outside of studying for all of these very long medical exams. And I decided, you know, I wanted to learn a little bit more about it, and I ended up competing in two different states. The first state I competed in was the first year I did it during medical school. And then I decided I was going to compete the following year in my home state. And I really hadn't planned to like go on. I was planning only to do like a local pageant and not go on to compete in the state pageant, just because my second year, I didn't think that I would have enough time to balance it out between medical school and competing. And then I ended up qualifying for state. I won the local pageant. And so I was kind of like, okay, I guess this is it. And I remember my parents too were like, how are we going to do this? Cause it meant me commuting between where my medical school is, which was in a different state, and my home state. But I did it. It was a blast. I met some amazing women who I'm still in touch with today. And they would probably be perfect for this podcast too. They're very empowering. and I learned a lot of great skills, lessons. You know, they say the four points of the crown are service, style, scholarship, and success. And I keep those with me at all times.
So what would you say is your biggest lesson from your pageant days then?
I would say to conquer your fears. One of my fears was public speaking. And the fact that I was able to get on stage and not just answer questions with an audience, but actually my talent was singing. I really found my voice and was able to build that confidence that I need to continue to pursue my career as a physician.
How has that affected your social media presence?
In terms of the pageant or in terms of...
Not as the pageant, the lesson. So how has the lesson affected or influenced your social media presence? Because you are very active and you are very vocal on very specific things, and you can, your passion comes through. So do you think that's impacted where you are today?
That's a great question. And I hadn't really thought of it, but I think you're right, because it's helped me kind of step outside of my comfort zone and speak out and advocate for what I'm really passionate about, which is disseminating accurate medical information and, you know, speaking out for social justice, as well as the safety of the public. I feel like there's so much misinformation out there that we as the qualified medical professionals need to step up and use our voice.
That's really good. It's a really great platform and mission, because not a lot of people are going to be like, well, I'm doing these things like trailblazing a whole new way of medical field, which we'll get to that, or fellowship rather. And then, you know, discussing, taking on the time to promote the correct information, to empower people to make decisions and not do something or listen to some unqualified person tell them how they should manage their health.
Exactly. You know, it's funny because I keep reaching out to some of the social media platforms to say, like, can you create some sort of healthcare verified checkmark so that people know the accounts they're following are medical professionals and, you know, they are a legitimate source of information, as opposed to other accounts that they don't have the qualifications.
That's a really good idea. So anyone listening who has that capability.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe like a red check mark or a red cross or something.
Yeah. I don't know about like a red cross would be better, but it's really close to like an X.
Oh, that's
in my
a good
mind.
Point. Yes. I was thinking like the American Red Cross. They probably wouldn't want their logo to be used that way though.
Yeah, that's a trademark issue. So fast forwarding, you're starting your fellowship in cancer rehabilitation. So can you give some insight about that and how you're trailblazing that way?
Yes. So I'm very excited. I'm going to be the first cancer rehabilitation fellow in Philadelphia. And it's a small field within physical medicine and rehabilitation that focuses on treating the cancer population. So that includes helping them get back to their functional goals and quality of life, both before their diagnosis. We might be what's called prehabilitating them, so getting them to an even stronger point before they go through their chemotherapy treatment or surgery, whatever the intervention is that they need. And then during their treatment for cancer, we will be the rehabilitation doctors helping them maintain their health and their strength. And then following their treatment afterward, we're there, you know, if there are any complications with the chemotherapy. A lot of times patients might end up with some neurologic damage or disorders. Or we've had issues with swallowing, we've had issues with just pain overall, and weakness, fatigue. And so we're the doctors that try to figure out what's going on in terms of those complications, especially when it comes to neurologic and musculoskeletal disorders. And then we help to find ways to improve them, whether it's prescribing them therapy or some sort of assistive device, or if they need some sort of injection or medication that can help to manage those symptoms and hopefully relieve them and help get them back to their functioning quality of life and back into the community.
Did you ever think this is what you'd be using your medical degree for?
No, actually, I did not. And the reason is because when I first started medical school, I thought I wanted to be a dermatologist. And a part of that was because I loved the idea of being a detective and kind of seeing how much you can learn from just looking at someone and seeing their skin and, you know, seeing kind of how they – basically their lifestyle by looking at tan lines, determining, you know, do they work outside a lot. And I thought that with your skin as a roadmap, there's so much you can do as a physician to treat these patients. And there definitely is, but I realized that I didn't want to spend the rest of my life looking at skin, which led me to finding my passion in – physical medicine and rehabilitation. I loved that it combined the neurological system with the musculoskeletal system. And as an osteopathic physician, we have a pretty strong grasp of anatomy. We work with our hands a lot doing osteopathic manipulative medicine. So I fell in love with rehab and helping patients get back to their quality of life. And when I got to residency, I thought that I wanted to go into sports medicine, specifically dance medicine, because I was a dancer. I was a dancer and a cheerleader throughout high school and college. And then I realized that the most fulfillment I got from treating patients was when I was treating cancer patients. And the thing, especially about sports medicine, is, those type of treatments, it's still in demand in the cancer population. And so if I want to, I can gear my practice to focusing on, if I wanted to, a sports specialty. So basically what I'm trying to say is I wanted to focus my practice in general physiatry within the cancer population, knowing that I could still use what I've learned about sports medicine with those patients.
So basically it's kind of having like a backup plan or a different avenue if you wanted to go out and do your own business, that you weren't just solely in one concentrated area. You could blend the two some way, somehow make yourself more, I don't want to say marketable, but
having like a more versatile skill set.
Yes. There we
yeah,
go.
That's very true. I mean, I really enjoy learning about sports medicine and dance medicine, but I also, there's so much more that I loved in the physiatry field that I didn't want to limit myself and, you know, kind of put myself in this niche. And I found that treating the cancer population brought me the fulfillment that I was looking for in my career.
So how did you make that realization? Was it just like you're walking down the street one day and it just popped into your head? Were you journaling? Like, what did that look like for you?
I was at a medical conference in Florida And we had an event at Harry Potter World. And I remember standing in line to get butter beer. And there was a woman standing behind me, and she offered to take a picture when I was trying to get a group picture with all my co-residents. And then we started getting to talking, and it turned out that she also worked in Philadelphia. And I mentioned that, you know, I was a resident, and she mentioned that she had just started working in the cancer rehabilitation field, and if I was interested in pursuing an elective, to reach out to her. And I had at that time no idea what cancer rehabilitation was, but I was also reading this book called Emperor of All Maladies, which was all about the history of chemotherapy. And I was talking to one of my best friends, Dr. Priyanka Shah, about the book, and she mentioned this fellowship again. And I had said, oh, I met a cancer rehabilitation physician in Philadelphia who actually offered to have me come and do an elective with her. Which is where I would shadow and get some clinical exposure treating those patients. And it ended up working out perfectly because I pursued that elective. I was able to spend a significant amount of time with those patients and learn more about the field. And that just so happens to be the fellowship program that I'm going to be spearheading as their first fellow.
That's really exciting, and that's really interesting how the universe like works in mysterious ways. You were in Florida getting butter beer, and you happened to meet this woman who took a picture for you, and then now here you are.
I know. I think it's so cool. I almost wish we had gotten a, she and I had gotten a picture together so that I could have like documented that moment. But yeah, probably when I graduate, I'll get her like a whole butter beer mix or something as a thank you.
But how would you know then to get like a picture at that time? You wouldn't even be thinking. You're probably like, oh, it was some nice stranger, and that was interesting coincidence that happened.
I know. The world is, it's such a small world. It works in mysterious ways. So that's very true. But she's a Harry Potter fan. I'm a Harry Potter fan. It was clearly meant to be.
Clearly meant to be. So as you're getting ready to start your fellowship, so at the time we're recording this is before you're going to start it, what is your mindset like? Because it's something new, different.
Yes, it is. It's definitely going to be a lot more responsibility. And I think I'm excited. I'm really looking forward to learning a lot. I'm a little nervous about the billing side and the administrative side because as a resident, we didn't really have to deal with that and figuring out like what level to bill for patients. But as a fellow, I'll definitely have more responsibility in that aspect, which will be great for when I finish in that year and become an attending. And I'm excited to also kind of be a mentor to the residents that are going to be in my program and hopefully pass on some valuable advice that can help them in their future career and kind of, you know, how to decide where they want to go, what they want to do. I think this is going to be a very interesting start to not just the fellowship, but the year in general, given what's happening right now with the pandemic. There's a lot of things transitioning to telehealth. So I feel like I'm going to be very tech savvy by the end of it.
I can imagine. And plus the idea of billing alone, I feel like that is just its own little animal. Because I know what it's like to be an attorney and bill for hours and what a nightmare that can be sometimes.
Oh my God.
I give you all of the best well wishes and hopefully you don't make too many mistakes.
Thank you. I know. So at least I have a great support network just in case I have any questions there.
That's always good to have the support network there who are willing and wanting to teach instead of just being thrown into it and expecting you to know it all. I think when you're learning out, a lot of people forget that no matter how old you are coming out of school, it doesn't mean you've been working in the field to know.
Exactly.
So you're doing all of this, and I know you're studying for your MBA. What is your ultimate end goal, or what's your goal in the next 5 years, maybe 10 years, if you've thought that far?
Oh, gosh. 10 years, I haven't thought that far. I don't even know if I've thought 5 years. Right now I'm studying as well. I am studying for my MBA and I'm also studying for my specialty board exams. So I'm just hoping I get through August. but I think at the end of all of this, I do want to stay in academia. I am interested in continuing to build the evidence-based medicine foundation that we have and pursue research. With my MBA, I'm hoping to go into administration because I feel like, you know, especially healthcare policy and understanding kind of the business side of medicine, there's a lot to offer as a physician myself. I think that they definitely need more doctors on that side of the healthcare system.
So that way they understand what the actual doctors are doing versus keeping the two separate?
Yeah, exactly. And to recognize that we are, what we're doing is for the patients, not for profit. Mm.
That is so true. I mean, they'll say at the end of the day, it's a business, but you don't necessarily go in being a doctor thinking it's for the money. And if you do, I think it's the same outcome for an attorney. You won't be a very happy human.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
So since you haven't thought about your next 5 years or 10 years, that's okay. Getting into it, because you do have a lot on your plate studying for exams. What would you want to do that's for fun besides school? Is there like vacations, places you've always wanted to travel?
So it's funny you asked. There is something that I've always wanted to do, which hopefully maybe within the next 5 years I will be able to. It's something I had heard about when I was, I think I was in college or medical school at the time, but it's called an around the world ticket. And I hope it still exists, but from my understanding, you purchase a ticket and depending on how many stops you want to make, it could range from, I think, $3,000 to $20,000. So I also have to make sure I have enough financial resources. And then you have 1 year to use it, and most people can do it either within 6 months or 1 year, but you choose a direction, east or west, and then you just show up at the airport. I was told you don't have to even like book a ticket, and you decide what country you want to go to, and they put you on a plane, and you travel to that country. And then you just start making your way around the world. And the rule is you can't go backwards, and you have to depart from the same airport that you arrived at. But like you could go to Europe and spend time traveling all over Europe and then just depart from whichever airport you landed in and continue to make your way around the world. So that is kind of my dream. I feel like it's something that I should take advantage of while I'm young and healthy and my joints are able to handle all of that walking and tourism someday, hopefully.
That sounds like something fun, especially when the pandemic dies down at least. There's another, the travel restrictions lift and can get to a new normal.
Exactly.
Yeah. Which I'm assuming it's going to resemble some of the old, but not much.
Yes, that's very true. And I think this just goes to show the importance of living in the now and taking advantage of what's available and what opportunities exist. Because as we can see with COVID-19, there have been a lot of restrictions placed.
What has been your biggest lesson or aha moment through this time during the pandemic, or even since the beginning of 2020? Because it's not like 2020 didn't come off without a start. So. Mm-hmm.
I mean, I will say I do love that didactics are now on a virtual platform, which didactics are our lectures that we have for residency. And I feel like that has just brought like a little bit of a plus side to everything else that's going on. But that's kind of separate, I guess, not necessarily the aha moment, but just something that has been a benefit to what seems to be such a difficult time. But I think the biggest aha moment for me was hearing the cheers at 7 p.m. around the city of Philadelphia as they are cheering on all of the healthcare professionals. I've seen chalk messages written on the entrances to the hospital saying, heroes work here. Thank you. You're so brave. You're so courageous. And as someone who has chosen this for my career, for my life, I never really considered myself as brave or a hero. You know, this is just our job. But getting that recognition, it's extremely humbling to hear that this is what the public, how the public perceives us, and it means so much to us that we have society's support, because it's tough. It can be very difficult, very challenging, and just the fact that, you know, everyone's willing to work together and to recognize everything that's been done. I think that has been just such an aha moment. Like, we're just so grateful.
Yeah, it's interesting what happens when you take away a lot of the, I guess fluff is coming, but the extras and not the essential work that is going on, and then realizing what is actually important versus what was just novelty and something you were just chasing.
That's so true. Yes, exactly. And it's amazing too, some of the changes that have been made in healthcare, some of the restrictions that have been lifted when it comes to a patient qualifying to go into the rehabilitation facilities. You know, it kind of makes you think, well, why were these restrictions in place in the first place, or why were these qualifications there in the first place if, you know, this is now beneficial for patient care, and we're seeing like the positive side of this kind of preventative medicine, these measures that are being taken.
It's always good to see. It's like it's showing you where the squeaky wheels are, or what they're wasn't necessarily needed, and showing that it's not actually needed, and fixing what does need to be fixed.
Yes, yes. And it's about what you need and not what you want. And I think people are starting to realize that. I think it gets into like Maslow's hierarchy, like food, water, shelter, what's important, and family too.
So for someone who hasn't heard of Maslow's hierarchy, can you let someone know what that is? Because I've heard of it, but someone listening probably hasn't.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. It's essentially just like the basic necessities of humans. And that would be essentially like food, water, and shelter. And then everything else is considered extraneous. That's a very rough definition.
No, that's exactly it. And so that's where it's like one point in my life, I was talking to a nurse friend, and she's just like, then she introduced me to this, and I'm like, oh, no wonder I feel stressed out, because my base level of necessity needs wasn't necessarily getting met by what standards I had. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Put on myself. Exactly. Yes, that's very true.
So what do you want to see changed in the medical field, or what's the thing you see the squeaky wheel that's missing that you're interested in pursuing and, you know, fixing or changing?
Well, I think there's a lot of hurdles set up right now for patients, especially when it comes to insurance and Medicare. This is especially true with getting like medications or assistive devices and not getting the coverage, or having to establish medical need. And even if the medical need is there, being turned down and having to do peer-to-peers. And, you know, it's taking time away from us treating our patients to have a peer-to-peer conversation with the insurance company and convince them why this is medically necessary, when it should be medically necessary from the beginning. Like, it should be obvious from the beginning. And I think that decreasing those restrictions and limitations can provide more preventative healthcare measures and better access to healthcare to medical devices to prescriptions that are needed, that are life-saving, without having to jump through all of those hurdles.
Mm. Again, the business of serving people, not the business of making money.
Yes, exactly. And I think, I'm sure you probably see this as an attorney, the documentation, I mean, you can just get so burnt out from having to document so much. And I understand the importance of making sure that everyone's on the same page, but sometimes it just feels like all we do is click things or type things out, and we don't get as much face time with the patient because of that.
Mm-hmm. And it makes the whole process very impersonal because you're meant to serve your client, your patient, whoever, but a lot of the back time that you're spending is actually paperwork. Mm-hmm.
Yes. And patients don't often see that. You know, we might spend upwards of a few hours reading through their documentation, reading through their notes, and then we go in to see the patient and we might only have a 15-minute slot or a 20-minute slot available to see the patient. But then after that appointment, we are writing up our own notes, which could take upwards of an hour, 2 hours, you know, consulting physicians if we need to get their opinion, or connecting them with other healthcare providers. And I feel like that's a lot of the behind the scenes that patients don't see.
Yep, it is. And then they don't understand why we're all doing it. A lot of it's because lawsuits have happened, therefore that's why you need more documentation. It's to cover everyone's behind, essentially.
Yes.
It's not a gotcha. It's never a gotcha.
I know.
What is something you would, or a piece of advice you would give your younger self?
So this is something that I tell a lot of prospective medical school applicants and medical school students as well as residents, that just in general when it comes to this career, and I mean even law, or you know any career that is going to take a lot of time, a lot of energy, to keep in mind that it's a marathon, not a sprint, that this is something that you're going to have to pace yourself so you don't get burnt out, that you're a lifelong learner, and this is your life. This is going to be your future, and to keep going, and you'll get to that finish line, and you're going to enjoy it.
Yeah. It's one of those things where we live in such an instantaneous world that, you know, you forget some other things take time. You can't just click a button and magically everything changes, or magically all the clothes you need in your closet are there, mm-hmm. even after you just gone shopping type of thing. So
Exactly. It's a marathon, not a sprint. And once you get to that finish line, you'll find that you're ready to go the extra mile too.
And then it's also like, take time to celebrate and look back at all that you've done and created. Just because it's a marathon doesn't mean there's one ever going to be a clear end date, because a lot of them muddle together, especially when you're driven and you're expanded your capacity to be able to do things.
Yeah, there might be some hurdles that you have to jump along the way too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So transitioning into our final questions, where can everyone find you online?
So I am available on Instagram at dr.cole. It's spelled out dr.cole, C-O-L-E. And then it's the same username for TikTok. And then for Twitter, it's Dr. Alyssa Cole, DrAlyssaCole. And my blog, as I mentioned before, which is a blog about my career in medicine, living healthy, lifestyle, fashion, food. It's Daily Dose of Vita, vita.blogspot.com. And if somebody wants to email me, they can email me at dailydoseofvita@gmail.com. Mm.
Okay. What's a book, resource, podcast that has added a lot of value to your life that you would share with the audience?
I love listening to Radiolab. As someone who has a passion for science, I feel like I learned so much about topics that I wouldn't have even really considered to add on my radar. But they also are often inspired by medical topics. So, for example, there was a great one all about rabies and something called the, I believe it's called the Milwaukee Protocol. So that was very interesting. I won't go into it too much because you guys should listen to that podcast. The book that I had mentioned earlier, Emperor of All Maladies, is one of my favorite books. I just think that it's written very well and almost poetically about the history of cancer and how we've come to find the chemotherapy agents that we use. And let me see, other resources. I mean, right now, I would probably tell everyone to continue to follow the CDC and WHO in terms of their guidelines for making sure that they're practicing the correct safety measures. Wash your hands, wear a mask, continue to social distance, stay 6 feet apart, and be safe.
All such very good advice. Alyssa, what would you say has been your bravest moment so far?
My bravest moment so far. Competing for the Miss America state pageants was definitely probably one of my bravest moments. And I feel like that's because, like I had mentioned earlier, it really got me out of my comfort zone and I was able to conquer my fear of public speaking. But more recently, I think my bravest moment was having the chance to work on the front line of a worldwide pandemic and really put my patients first and live the oath that I took as a physician.
Mm. Those are two very powerful moments and very diverse moments.
Yes.
What would be your definition of brave?
I think my definition of brave would be having the courage to stand up for what you believe in and most of all, being able to believe in yourself.
It's like mic drop it right there. Have the courage to stand up for what you believe in and believe in yourself. I mean, those are two very important things, especially with everything going on in the world right now. It's very important to believe in yourself, but also use your voice to share and spread what you believe and what you need, what you see needs to be changed in the world.
Absolutely. That's exactly right. And, you know, I think often, especially in medicine, there are so many people who second guess themselves, doubt themselves. There's something called imposter syndrome. That's essentially, you know, where you do that. And it's pervasive throughout the medical field. And I think it's something that there needs to be more awareness of, and people need to recognize it and know that they're not alone in experiencing it. And that, you know, it's something that you should be able to conquer and be brave enough to believe in yourself.
Mm. So for someone listening who is in the medical field or not, what does that look like for you or other doctors that you've seen who have gone through imposter syndrome or have moments where they're going through it and then they come out and they're confident? Because imposter syndrome, in my point of view, it's just something that's consistent as you continue to grow and push yourself. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean the knowledge that you've learned automatically you're just going to be this confident human for the rest of your life. There's going to be stuff that comes in. I mean, everyone has their ups and downs, but what does that, again, look like in the medical field, so someone who's listening to it understands that they're not alone?
I mean, I think that recognizing that you will fail or make mistakes is exactly as you say, a huge part of learning and growth. And like I had said previously, you know, in medicine, we are all lifelong learners. And if you didn't make these mistakes, you know, a smooth sea never made a skillful sailor. If you didn't make those mistakes or have to learn from them, then you wouldn't be the skilled professional that you are and that you're becoming. There's a really great article by, I believe it's Atul Gawande, that talks about the importance of coaching. And he makes an analogy between playing tennis and having a tennis coach and being a surgeon. And when we finish residency or fellowship, we don't have an attending who is teaching us at that point. You know, we are the attending. We are the ones who are passing on that knowledge to the future generation of doctors. But what we need to have in medicine is we need to continue to ask for feedback from our colleagues to find out, you know, how we can grow. Since we don't have that quote unquote tennis coach helping us improve our skills, we need to seek out those mentors and actively improve our own skill set and our own clinical skills and physical exam.
I mean, that's great advice for anyone in any industry. It's just, I'm interested to know when this, like, it doesn't no longer takes a village to do things. You're done learning. You should stop seeking out feedback that, you know, once you hit a certain degree, age, or I don't know how many years in your profession, like, without having someone coaching you, essentially, because you need one for the rest of your life. It looks different. So this could also be mentorship as well for other people. But I think of it the same way as, like, you had a coach in high school. You're used to getting feedback, or at least for me and a lot of other athletes, getting feedback. So without that, how would you improve? Mm-hmm.
Exactly. And I think, you know, the same goes the opposite way, you know, when you reverse roles. And as somebody who might be a senior to another resident or a medical student or a prospective medical student, don't be afraid to give them feedback as long as it's constructive, because they might not know, you know, if there is something that they could improve upon.
Mm-hmm. 'Cause everyone's always learning or seeking to learn and wanting to grow. Yes.
Exactly.
Well, Alyssa, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. Thank you for everything you do in the medical field. And I'm excited to see where you go in the next 5 to 10 years.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure. I'm excited to see where I end up in the next 5 years, too. I'll have to put more thought into that next time.
Well, sometimes it happens. If you think about it, you don't. Yeah. I'm thinking of it, too.
Well, stay safe.
Hey everyone, thank you so much for listening to this episode of Built Brave. If you love this episode, heck, if you like this episode, please head on over, give it a rate, review, subscribe, like, shout it out on your social media with your major takeaways and what you loved about the episode. And as always, tag me in that at Lo Wentworth, because I love hearing what you guys got out of the episodes. And until next time, remember, you've always been brave.